The Business Management Dilemma. How to manage managing other people. 1 Minute Solutions to Leadership, Motivating Others, and Creating Productive Environments are often found close to home in surprisingly simple ways. Now, Dr. Spencer Johnson to introduce the 1 Minute Manager.
This is Spencer Johnson, co-author of the story you're about to hear, The 1 Minute Manager, a simple parable which you'll meet many characters and watch them use these very obvious, simple management techniques, which seem so simple that they're unbelievable. And yet they work. In the 3 years since the book has been out and 4 million people reading it in 26 languages, the people who have gained the most are those who've listened to the story and who've thought about how they're going to apply this in their own world. We'd all like to have a 1 minute manager, someone that treats us this way. And the challenge is really to be one, so that the people who work for you really will feel good about themselves and produce good results. Because, you know, when you're really honest and ask yourself how many people work for you, guess how many it is in round numbers? Zero. Who do we work for? Sure, we each work for ourselves, and great managers know that. Here's a simple way to bring out the very best in other people. And in doing so, discover the very best about yourself.
Once there was a bright young man who was looking for an effective manager. He wanted to work for one. He wanted to become one. He'd spoken with many managers, young and old. He'd gone into every kind of office, large and small, and was beginning to see the full spectrum of how people manage people. But he wasn't always pleased with what he saw. He'd seen many tough managers whose organizations seemed to win while their people lost. Some of their superiors thought they were good managers. The man also met many nice managers whose people seemed to win while their organizations lost. Some of the people who reported to them thought they were good managers. Those to whom they reported had their doubts. It was as though most managers in the world were primarily interested either in results or in people. The managers who were interested in results often seemed to be labeled autocratic, while the managers interested in people were often labeled democratic. The young man thought each of these managers, the tough autocrat and the nice democrat, were only like half managers. He returned home tired and discouraged. Effective managers manage themselves and the people they work with so that both the organization and the people profit from their presence. But where are they? Then he began hearing marvelous stories about a special manager who lived in a nearby town. He heard that people liked to work for this man and that they produced great results together. Quickly, he telephoned the special manager's secretary for an appointment. The secretary put him through immediately. The young man asked this special manager when he could see him. He heard, "Any time this week is fine, except Wednesday morning. You pick the time." The young man quietly chuckled because this supposedly marvelous manager sounded like a kook to him. What kind of manager had that kind of time available? When the young man arrived at the manager's office, he found him standing and looking out the window. When the young man coughed, the manager turned and smiled. He invited the young man to sit down. "What can I do for you, young man?" The young man said, "I'd like to ask you some questions about how you manage people." "Fire away." "Well, to begin with, do you hold regularly scheduled meetings with your subordinates?" "Yes, I do. Once a week on Wednesdays from 9 to 11. That's why I couldn't see you then." "Well, what do you do at those meetings?" "I listen while my people review and analyze what they accomplished last week, the problems they had, and what still needs to be accomplished. Then we develop plans and strategies for the next week." "Are the decisions made at those meetings binding on both you and your people?" "Of course they are. What would be the point of having the meeting if they weren't?" "Then you're a participative manager, aren't you?" "On the contrary, I don't believe in participating in any of my people's decision-making. Well, then what's the purpose of your meetings? I already told you that. Please, young man, do not ask me to repeat myself. It's a waste of my time and yours. We're here to get results. The purpose of this organization is efficiency. By being organized, we are a great deal more productive. Ah, then you're more result-oriented than people-oriented. No, the manager resounded. I hear that all too often. How on earth can I get results if it's not through people? I care about people and results. They go hand in hand. Here, look at this. I keep it on my desk to remind me of a practical truth. People who feel good about themselves produce good results. Think about yourself. When do you work best? I get more done when I'm feeling good about myself. Of course you do. And so does everyone else. The young man raised his index finger with newfound insight. So, helping people to feel good about themselves is a key to getting more done. Yes. However, remember, productivity is more than just the quantity of work done. It's also the quality. The manager walked over to the window. Come over here, young man. Do you see how many foreign cars there are on the road? Why do you think people are buying foreign cars? Because American manufacturers did not make enough cars? Or because they did not make the quality car the American public really wanted? Now that I think of it, it's a question of quality and quantity. Good point. Productivity is both quantity and quality. And frankly, the best way to achieve both of these results is through people. Well, you've already said that you're not a participative manager. Just how would you describe yourself? That's easy. I'm a one-minute manager. You're what? I'm a one-minute manager. I call myself that because it takes very little time for me to get very big results from people. Although the young man had spoken with many managers, he'd never heard one talk like this. You don't believe me, do you? You don't believe that I'm a one-minute manager? Well, I must admit it's hard for me even to imagine. Listen, you'd better talk to my people if you really want to know what kind of manager I am. The manager leaned over and spoke into the office intercom. His secretary, Ms. Medcalf, came in moments later and handed the young man a sheet of paper. Those are the names, positions, and phone numbers of the six people who report to me. Which one should I talk to? That's your decision. Pick any name, talk to any one of them, or all of them. Well, I mean, who should I start with? I already told you, I don't make decisions for other people. Make that decision yourself. You have asked me not once, but twice to make a simple decision for you. Frankly, young man, I find that annoying. Do not ask me to repeat myself. Either pick a name and get started, or take your search for effective management elsewhere. The visitor was stunned. He was uncomfortable, very uncomfortable. A moment of embarrassed silence seemed like an eternity. Then the one-minute manager looked the young man in the eye. You want to know about managing people, and I admire that. He shook the visitor's hand. If you have any questions after talking to some of my people, come back and see me. I appreciate your interest and desire to learn how to manage. I would, in fact, like to give you the concept of the one-minute manager as a gift. Someone gave it to me once, and it's made all the difference to me. The young man left the manager's office somewhat dumbfounded. As he passed the secretary, she said understandingly, I can see from your dazed look that you've already experienced our one-minute manager. I guess I have. Maybe I can help you. I've phoned the six people who report to him. Five of them are here, and they've each agreed to see you. You may be better able to understand our one-minute manager after you've spoken with them. The young man thanked her, looked over the list, and decided to talk to three of them, Mr. Trunell, Mr. Levy, and Ms. Brown. When the young man arrived at Trunell's office, he found a middle-aged man smiling at him. Well, you've been to see the old man. He's quite a guy, isn't he? He seems that way. Did he tell you about the one-minute manager? He sure did. It's not true, is it? You'd better believe it is. I hardly ever see him. You mean you never get any help from him? Essentially very little. Although he does spend some time with me at the beginning of a new task or responsibility. That's when he does one-minute goal setting. One-minute goal setting, what's that? That's the first of the three secrets to one-minute management.
1-minute goal setting is the first one and the foundation for 1-minute management. You see, in most organizations, when you ask people what they do and then ask their boss, all too often you get two different lists. In fact, in some organizations I've worked in, any relationship between what I thought my job responsibilities were and what my boss thought they were purely coincidental. And then I could get in trouble for not doing something I didn't even think was my job. Does that ever happen here? Never happens here. The 1-minute manager always makes it clear what our responsibilities are and what we're being held accountable for. Well, just how does he do that? Trunell began to explain. Once we have agreed on what needs to be done, then each goal is recorded on no more than a single page. The 1-minute manager feels that a goal and its performance standard should take no more than 250 words to express. He insists that anyone be able to read it within a minute. He keeps a copy and I keep a copy, so everything's clear and so we can both periodically check the progress. Well, do you have these one-page statements for every goal? The old man believes in the 80-20 goal-setting rule. That is, 80% of your really important results will come from 20% of your goals. So we only do 1-minute goal-setting on that 20%. That is, our key areas of responsibility. Maybe 3 to 6 goals in all. Of course, in the event a special project comes up, we set special 1-minute goals. Interesting. Sounds like a philosophy of no surprises. Everyone knows what's expected from the beginning. But is 1-minute goal setting just understanding what your responsibilities are? No. Once we know what our job is, the manager always makes sure we know what good performance is. In other words, performance standards are clear. He shows us what he expects. Well, how does he do that? Show you what he expects. Let me give you an example. One of our 1-minute goals was this: identify performance problems and come up with solutions which, when implemented, will turn the situation around. When I first came to work here, I spotted a problem that needed to be solved, but I didn't know what to do, so I called the 1-minute manager. When he answered the phone, I said, "Sir, I have a problem." Before I could get another word out, he said, "Good, that's what you've been hired to solve." Then silence. I didn't know what to do. The silence was deafening. I eventually stuttered out, but, sir, I don't know how to solve this problem." "Trunell," he said, "one of your goals for the future is for you to identify and solve your own problems. But since you're new, come on up and we'll talk." When I got there, he said, "Tell me, Trunell, tell me what your problem is, but put it in behavioral terms." "Behavioral terms," I echoed. "What do you mean by behavioral terms?" "I mean that I do not want to hear about only attitudes or feelings. Tell me what is happening in observable, measurable terms." "I don't know," I said. "Then don't waste my time," he snapped. I just froze in amazement for a few seconds. I didn't know what to do. He mercifully broke the dead silence. "If you can't tell me what you'd like to be happening," he said, "you don't have a problem yet. You're just complaining. A problem only exists if there's a difference between what is actually happening and what you desire to be happening." I suddenly realized I knew what I wanted to be happening. After I told him, he asked me to talk about what may have caused the discrepancy between the actual and the desired. After that, the 1-minute manager said, "Well, what are you going to do about it?" "Well, I could do A," I said. "If you did A, would what you want to happen actually happen?" he asked. "No," I said. "Then you have a lousy solution. What else could you do?" "I could do B. But if you did B, will what you want to happen really happen?" he countered again. "No." "Then that's also a bad solution. What else can you do?" I thought about it for a couple of minutes and said, "Well, I could do C, but if I do C, what I want to happen won't happen, so that's a bad solution, isn't it?" "Right, you're starting to come around. Is there anything else you could do?" "Well, maybe I could combine some of these solutions," I said. "In fact, if I do A this week, B next week, and C in 2 weeks, I'll have it solved." "That's fantastic. Thanks so much. You solved my problems for me." He got very annoyed. "I did not," he interrupted. "You solved it yourself. I just ask you questions. Questions you're able to ask yourself. Now get out of here and start solving your own problems on your own time, not mine." I knew what he had done, of course. He'd shown me how to solve problems so that I could do it on my own in the future. Then he stood, looked me straight in the eye and said, "You're good, Trunell. Remember that the next time you have a problem." I remember smiling as I left his office. "So," the young man began, "one-minute goal setting is simply agree on your goals, see what good behavior looks like, write out each of your goals on a single sheet of paper using less than 250 words, read and reread each goal, which requires only a minute or so each time you do it, take a minute every once in a while out of your day to look at your performance, and see whether or not your behavior matches your goal. That's it. You're a fast learner."
"Thank you.
But if one-minute goal setting is the first secret to becoming a one-minute manager, what are the other two?"
Trunell smiled.
"Why don't you ask Levy that? You're scheduled to see him this morning, too, aren't you?"
"Yes. And thanks so much for your time, sir."
The young man walked the length of the building and took the elevator to the second floor. Mr. Levy met him at his office.
"Did he tell you about being a one-minute manager?" asked Levy.
"He sure did. It's not true, is it?" asked the young man, wondering if he'd get a different answer from Trunell's.
"You'd better believe it's true. I hardly ever see him."
"You mean you never get any help from him?"
"Essentially very little, although he does spend a fair amount of time with me at the beginning of a new task or responsibility."
"Yes, I know about one-minute goal setting."
"Actually, I wasn't thinking so much about one-minute goal setting. I was referring to one-minute praisings."
"One-minute praisings?
Are they the second secret to becoming a one-minute manager?" "Yes, they are. In fact, when I first started to work here, the one-minute manager said that he knew that it would be a lot easier for me to do well if I got crystal-clear feedback from him on how I was doing. He said he wanted me to succeed. He wanted me to be a big help to the organization and to enjoy my work. He told me that he would try, therefore, to let me know in no uncertain terms when I was doing well and when I was doing poorly. And then he cautioned me that it might not be very comfortable at first for either of us."
"Why?"
"Because," he pointed out to me then, "most managers don't manage that way, and people aren't used to it. Then he assured me that such feedback would be a big help to me."
"Well, can you give me an example of what you're talking about?"
"Sure. Shortly after I started to work, I noticed that after my manager had done one-minute goal setting with me, he would stay in close contact."
"What do you mean, close contact?"
"Well, there were two ways he did it. First of all, he observed my activities very closely. He never seemed to be very far away. Secondly, he made me keep detailed records of my progress, which he insisted I send to him. At first, I thought he was spying and didn't trust me. Then I found out he was trying to catch me doing something right. In fact, we have a motto around here that says, 'Help people reach their full potential. Catch them doing something right.' In most organizations, the managers spend most of their time catching people doing something wrong. Here, we put the accent on the positive. We catch people doing something right."
"What happens, Mr. Levy, when the one-minute manager catches you doing something right?"
"That's when he gives you a one-minute praising."
"What does that mean?"
"Well, when he has seen that you've done something right, he comes over and makes contact with you. That often includes putting his hand on your shoulder or briefly touching you in a friendly way."
"Doesn't that bother you, when he touches you?"
"No, on the contrary, it helps. I know he really cares about me and he wants me to prosper. When he makes contact, it's brief, but it lets me know once again that we're really on the same side. Anyway, after that, he looks you straight in the eye and tells you precisely what you did right. Then he shares with you how good he feels about what you did."
"That makes you feel pretty good, huh?"
"Certainly does. First of all, I get a praising as soon as I've done something right. I don't have to wait for an annual performance review. Second, since he specifies exactly what I did right, I know he's sincere and familiar with what I'm doing. Third, he's consistent. He'll praise me if I'm performing well and deserve it, even if things are not going well for him elsewhere. I know he may be annoyed about other things, but he responds to where I am, not just to where he is at the time, and I really appreciate that."
"Doesn't all this praising have to take up a lot of the manager's time?"
"No," said Levy. "Remember, you don't have to praise someone for very long for them to know you notice and you care. It usually takes less than a minute."
"Is he always trying to catch you doing something right?"
"No, of course not. Just when you first start work here and when you begin a new project or responsibility, then he does. After you get to know the ropes, he doesn't seem to be around much. After a while, you begin to catch yourself doing things right and you start praising yourself. Also, you're always wondering when he might praise you again, and that seems to keep you going, even when he's not around. It's uncanny.
I've never worked so hard at a job in my life. Let me see if I have it. The one-minute praising works well when you... 1. Tell people up front that you're going to let them know how they're doing. 2. Praise people immediately. 3. Tell people what they did right. Be specific. 4. Tell people how good you feel about what they did right and how it helps the organization and the other people who work there. 5. Stop for a moment of silence to let them feel how you feel. 6. Encourage them to do more of the same. 7. Shake hands or touch people in a way that makes it clear that you support their success in the organization. What's the third secret? Levy laughed. Why don't you ask Miss Brown? I understand you're planning to talk to her, too. Yes, I am. Well, thanks so much for your time. That's okay. Time is one thing I have plenty of. You see, I'm a one-minute manager myself now.
The next morning, the young man arrived at Ms. Brown's office at the stroke of 9. A very smartly dressed woman in her late 50s greeted him. He got the usual, "He's quite a guy, isn't he?" routine. But by now, the young man was getting to the point where he could sincerely say, "Yes, he is." "Did he tell you about being a one-minute manager?" asked Ms. Brown. "That's all I've been hearing about," the young man said, laughing. "It's not true, is it?" "You'd better believe it is. I hardly ever see him." "You mean you don't have much contact with him outside your regular weekly meetings?" "Essentially very little, except, of course, when I do something wrong. But I thought the key motto around here was catching people doing something right." "It is. But you have to know some things about me. I've been working here for quite a few years. I know this operation inside and out. As a result, the one-minute manager doesn't have to spend much time with me, if any, on goal setting. In fact, I usually write out my own one-minute goals and send them over to him. Another thing about me that's important is that I just love my work. As a result, I do most of my own one-minute praising. In fact, I feel if you're not for yourself, who is? A friend of mine told me a motto I've always remembered. If you don't blow your own horn, someone else will use it as a spittoon. Well, you said he spends time with you when you do something wrong. What do you mean? If I make a significant mistake, that's when I invariably get a one-minute reprimand.
A what?
A one-minute reprimand. That's the third secret to becoming a one-minute manager.
Well, how does it work?
It's simple. If you've been doing a job for some time and you know how to do it well, and you make a mistake, the one-minute manager is quick to respond. As soon as he's learned about the mistake, he comes to see me. First, he confirms the facts. Then he might put his hand on my shoulder, or maybe just come around to my side of the desk.
Well, doesn't that bother you?
Sure it does, because you know what's coming, especially since he doesn't have a smile on his face. He looks me straight in the eye and tells me precisely what I did wrong. Then he shares with me how he feels about it. He's angry, annoyed, frustrated, or whatever he's feeling.
Well, how long does that take?
Only about 30 seconds, but sometimes it seems forever to me. Then he lets what he said sink in with a few seconds of silence. Boy, does it sink in. Then he looks me squarely in the eye and lets me know how competent he thinks I am. He makes sure that I understand that the only reason he's angry with me is that he has so much respect for me. He says he knows that this is so unlike me. He says how much he looks forward to seeing me some other time, as long as I understand that he does not welcome that same mistake again. The young man broke in.
It must make you think twice.
Yes. First of all, he usually gives me the reprimand as soon as I've done something wrong. Second, since he specifies exactly what I did wrong, I know he's on top of things and that I'm not going to get away with sloppiness. Third, since he doesn't attack me as a person, only my behavior, it's easier for me not to become defensive. I don't try to rationalize away my mistake by fixing blame on him or somebody else. I know he's being fair. And fourth, he's consistent. He will reprimand me for doing something wrong, even if things are going well for him elsewhere.
Does the whole process really take only a minute?
Usually. And when it's over, it's over. A one-minute reprimand doesn't last long, but I can guarantee you, you don't forget it. And you don't usually make the same mistake twice.
Well, I think I know what you're talking about.
I'm afraid I asked him... I hope you didn't ask him to repeat himself. The young man was embarrassed.
I did.
Well, then you know what it's like to be on the receiving end of a one-minute reprimand. I wonder, Ms. Brown, if the one-minute manager ever makes a mistake. He seems almost too perfect.
Hardly. But he does have a good sense of humor. So when he does make a mistake, like forgetting to do the last half of the one-minute reprimand, we point it out to him and kid him about it. After we've had time to recover from the reprimand, that is. We might, for example, phone him later and tell him we know we were wrong. Then we might laugh and ask for the praising half of the reprimand, because we're not feeling too good. He usually laughs and says he's sorry he forgot to remind me that I'm an okay person. You see, the one-minute manager has taught us the value of being able to laugh at ourselves when we make mistakes. It helps us to get on with our work.
Well, that's terrific. How do you learn to do that?
Simply by watching the boss do it himself.
You mean your boss can laugh at himself when he makes a mistake?
Well, not always. He's like most of us. Sometimes it's tough. But he often can. And when he does laugh at himself, it has a positive effect on everyone around him.
As soon as he was in the hall, he reflected on what she had said. It sounded so simple. He reviewed in his own mind what you should do when you catch an experienced person doing something wrong. The one-minute reprimand works well when you tell people beforehand that you're going to let them know how they're doing and in no uncertain terms. In this first half of the reprimand, 1. Reprimand people immediately. 2. Tell people what they did wrong. Be specific. 3. Tell people how you feel about what they did wrong and in no uncertain terms. 4. Stop for a few seconds of uncomfortable silence to let them know how you feel. In this second half of the reprimand, 1. Shake hands or touch them in a way that lets them know that you are honestly on their side. 2. Remind them how much you value them. 3. Reaffirm that you think well of them but not of their performance in this situation. 4. Realize that when the reprimand is over, it's over.
Please turn the cassette over. We continue on the other side.